I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it.
That's part of my process of healing, is trying to find out where I am, who I truly am, versus what were my trauma responses. And I want to heal those.
You're listening to Make Some Noise podcast, episode number 424, with guest Elizabeth Kupferman. Welcome to Make Some Noise podcast, your guide for strategies, tools, and insight to empower yourself. I'm your host, Andrea Owen, global speaker, entrepreneur, life coach since 2007, and author of 3 books that have been translated into 18 languages and are available in 22 countries. Each week, I'll bring you a guest or a lesson that will help you maximize unshakable confidence, master resilience, and make some noise in your life. You ready? Let's go. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. I am so glad that you are here. I am double excited because today, this episode marks the kickoff of the new way that I am presenting you with the show. What I have decided to do is to divide the months up into themes. So with each theme, we are going to kind of centralize and have our conversation around a particular question. This theme that we're kicking off 2022 with is the question of, how do we heal ourselves? In all of the episodes coming up over the next couple of months, you'll hear me ask that question at the very end. How do we heal ourselves? I'm going to be talking to therapists. I'm talking to psychiatrists, psychologists, different people who have a little bit of different perspectives, definitely different expertise. And I'm always going to ask that question at the very end. So you're going to hear various answers to the question, how do we heal ourselves? Over the next few weeks, we're going to be talking to experts who are sharing their wisdom about family roles and IFS, which is internal family systems. It's a modality of therapy. We have experts talking about trauma responses, epigenetics, attachment styles, healing ancestral wounds. I am so excited about this. You guys know how much I love talking about kind of the deeper stuff and the things that we can talk about in counseling or therapy or even in the company of trusted friends. So I'm kicking it off with a woman that I met on TikTok. Yes, I know. It's not just an app for kids. Y'all, I've been telling you about it for a little while. I'm having so much fun over there. I'm at Hey Andrea Owen. If you do decide to download the app, please follow me. It's fun. And Elizabeth Kupferman has an account called Advanced Bitches, which is so funny to me. And it's all about what you love, the advanced learning, if you will, around personal development. And before I tell you more about her and we jump in, I want to tell you that it's a go for a retreat in 2021. If this pandemic at least somewhat behaves, we are going to go ahead and book a house in Asheville, North Carolina. I have narrowed it down and I got some interest from many of you about possibly coming to this retreat. So if you are interested in it, I would love for you to head on over to AndreaOwen.com/retreat so you can read about the logistics, the price range that we're going to offer it, just all of the things you, like the big things that you need to know to be able to make your decision if you want to come with us. I have not settled on a date as I'm recording this, but very soon we're going to open up registration. And if you sign up on that page in AndreaOwen.com/retreat, you are going to be the first to know two things. First, I'm going to send out an email just to that list saying, hey, I'm going to open registration on this date at this time, and I'm going to do my best to make it a time that is easy for all time zones. And then after that, we're going to open up registration and send out an email saying, hey, the doors are open. You can sign up if you would like. And the reason that I'm doing that is because a few years ago, the last time I held these retreats, a couple of them sold out within an hour. So I wanted to make sure that people who were truly interested in and really wanting to come, that you had a first chance at doing this. It's going to be a Daring Way retreat. This is the modality, the methodology, if you will, based on Brené Brown's research that I'm trained and certified in doing since 2014. And it's an incredible set of modules and tools and skills and strategies that you will walk away with. I'm so excited. AndreaOwen.com/retreat. All right, let's get into today's episode. Let me tell you a little bit about our friend who has graced us with her wisdom today. Elizabeth Kupferman is a licensed professional counselor and has a private practice and is the author of The Irreverent Grief Guide and The Irreverent Trust Guide, How to Trust Again After Trauma Fucked You Up. She teaches all about complex PTSD, grief and loss, introversion and high sensitivity, codependency, and all things advanced personal growth work in her counseling office, online classes, and she's on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube at Advanced Bitches. So without further ado, here is Elizabeth. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm so excited.
It's so fun to meet people that we follow in real life, that we follow on social media, and you are one of those people. And I probably, at least half of the people that I'm interviewing for this series on healing have come from TikTok. So
that's amazing,
isn't it?
Yes.
Mental health is huge over there.
Yes, yes. There's just so many freaking cool people over there.
Creative, funny, deep, introspective, wise, smart. Yes, it's really great. It's really great. So I encourage everyone who isn't over there yet to download the app. But I have some juicy questions for you, and I have so many, and we might kind of bounce around. So buckle up, everybody. So can you? I'm super curious because I don't think that I saw this, and you know, following you now for a while on TikTok. If you wouldn't mind sharing whatever you feel comfortable with, what brought you to this work in particular that like drew you into sharing and also specifically helping people with their own trauma and their own complex PTSD?
Few answers to that. One of them is I was born like this. Like I was just born, I'm an INFJ, and I came out of the womb when somebody says they're fine and I can read their subtext. Oh, you're absolutely not fine. And it's just a part of who I am as a person. If you look up INFJ in, you know, like,
do the I'm an ENFJ. So are we similar? Yeah. Just
do you know, like, what's the main occupation for yours?
I don't know what that means. I don't know that much. About Okay.
So like I had this chart once and it had like an occupation for like the main, like not necessarily
like what you should do for a living. You mean?
Yeah. So like mine just INFJ just says counselor. Like
that's a mindset. It must've been the same thing that we did.
Yeah.
I thought you meant occupation for each of the letters. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So there's that. And then, I'm 100% fucked up. And so I've been in therapy, you know, I have like substance abuse and addiction in my family. And then when my daughter was born, my whole thing was like, I am not going to be an alcoholic. I'm not going to be an alcoholic like them. Like I'm not, it's never happening. And I wasn't great, but you are that with food. Like, so okay. I'm 100% a food addict. And so when my daughter was born, I just remember, I mean, it was a very, you know, it's one of those moments in life where you're like, you'll never forget. Like it was huge for me. And I just looked at her and I'm like, oh my God, I have to break the cycle. Oh no. Oh no. I have to break the cycle. So that was the moment when I said, I will do whatever it takes to get better. I will do whatever it takes. I don't care how long it takes or how hard it hurts. I'm going to break the cycle. So that was
how old is your daughter now?
She's 32.
Oh, wow. Okay. I thought you were going to say she's like a teenager.
No, she's 32. So, okay. So I've been in therapy for 32 years.
Uh-huh. Just getting started.
Yes, exactly. So that's how I know how long. I'm like, oh, how old is she? Oh, okay. And so I just started different. At first it was like, I need to figure out how to stop binging and purging. Like all day long, like I got to stop doing that. That's not healthy. So that was my focus. I went to a bunch of eating disorder therapists and then I went into, you know, I was in it for a while, but I couldn't stop relapsing and I was really stuck and I was still lost and I still was a mess. And then I finally met the woman who saved my life and who just retired. It's breaking my heart because I saw her for over 20 years. She's like, okay, it's basically buckle up. It's time to do trauma work. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I've been doing. And that's the thing that helped me heal my eating disorder more than anything else was healing that, because that really gets to the root of the root of the root of the issue. Right. And so as I was learning, you know, as I started healing, I think I want to become a counselor. Like I want to do, cause I was doing as a sponsor.
People identify as addicts.
Totally. And I was a sponsor. I'm basically a therapist since I was in OA. So anyway,
Overeaters Anonymous for those of you who don't
thank
know what
you.
That is.
Thank you. Yes. And so I finally decided to go to grad school when my kids were in middle school.
Okay. Okay. That's so interesting. We have very parallel lives. Very similar. I've been in therapy since I was 18, but mine was more unwilling. It was more like, court appointed.
You had to go.
My parents got divorced and they're like, you should go to therapy, even though we still won't talk about anything. Okay. Now I have so many questions just based on that, but I want to stick to the script because I'm really interested in a few things because you talk about different roles. This is one of my favorite sort of, topics that you make TikToks on, like different roles that are put into a family.
Absolutely.
System. Talk about the hero, the golden child, the scapegoat. And I see myself in some of them. I actually kind of overlap with a couple of them. So can you talk more about that and maybe like give an example of your own family or just an arbitrary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So in a toxic family system, and this was invented, the theory came from like addiction, families who have addiction, but mm-hmm. I see it as all dysfunctional families have, you know, they're on a continuum. Yeah. And so, but I think that the roles still apply. So there's the hero / golden child. That's usually the firstborn, not always, but it's the one who the overachiever does all the things, shiny, shiny. And that one is, you know, the family needs to be saved, of course. So we need a hero. And the hero is usually, you know, helping the parents, helping the emotional life of the parents.
The responsible one.
Mm-hmm. Enable the responsible one. And the family needs somebody to brag about. The family needs somebody to point to say, see, we're fine.
Yeah.
And then you have the scapegoat. And that's the one that the patient, the family can call the identified patient. It's kind of sounded like that's what you were at 18. Like you need to go to
the problem.
Something's wrong with you, but we're fine. So the identified patient, the scapegoat, the problem, the one who's always in trouble, the one that's blamed. You know, I did a TikTok recently about like the hero and the scapegoat can do the same thing, but the scapegoat's going to get in trouble for it. Mm-hmm. And the scapegoat is needed in the family because the scapegoat needs, the family needs somebody to say, that's the problem, not us. That person, that's the issue, not us. And the scapegoat breaks my heart. Because they don't know, like we're all the roles, like we're all, you know, it's very hard when you're half, when your identity is swallowed up by these roles, it's a heartbreaking thing. But the scapegoat, especially because the scapegoat doesn't know that they're great. The scapegoat doesn't know that they're the same thing as the hero, that they're the opposite side of the hero, but the hero is going to get all the glory. And then they take on the identity of being bad. And that's just heartbreaking. And I think I don't know if it's true or not, but my hunch is it's much harder for the scapegoat to heal.
I'm wondering if anyone, can people change roles like as they get older? Okay. And 100%. Then kind of bounce back between, like, depending on what drama is going on in the family.
Yes. Okay. The psyche is complex. Mm-hmm. So I think we all have all of these roles. I know I have lived out all of these roles. I think that the roles can shift. So one of the things I talk about is when the hero decides to heal and stop saving the family and stop and start doing boundaries, they can then turn into the scapegoat.
That's happened.
They have betrayed the family.
I just got goosebumps when you said that, because that's what happened to me. I was the golden child who then grew up and started to heal and then saw all the dysfunction and started pointing it out. And then now I'm the scapegoat.
Yes, absolutely. That absolutely. Because when you stop filling the role, and you might see other kids or other whatever family, but they'll start rising as the hero. They'll take over your role, because especially like a scapegoat can slip into it. Usually it'll be the other kid, because the scapegoat needs to stay the scapegoat, because they still need somebody to say that person's bad. But they can rise up and kind of slip into more of the hero role, because you get a lot of accolades. Mm-hmm. Like, you pay for it with a pound of flesh every single day, but you get rewarded. It's really hard to sacrifice that. It truly is. One time my mom is a teacher, and she says something like, "Oh, I have one of you in my class." And I'm like, I feel so sorry for her. It breaks my heart. Poor thing. Is she okay?
I mean, the student?
Yes. Like the A student, the girl in the front of the class, like wanting to learn it all, the good one, the teacher's pet. Yes. And that you play the role in different. So if I'm the hero, then I'm also going to be the teacher's pet. I will show up and I'm the best worker. You know, that you play the role, you can't escape from it. It's just it follows you wherever you go.
Yeah.
And so for me, A student, magna cum laude, you know, all the things, like, always needed to hate getting in trouble. Like I have a panic attack if I get in trouble. Like but remember, all of this is to survive.
Yeah.
The reason I would get a panic attack if I get in trouble, because now that's messing with my survival. I'm a hero to survive. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the third one is the lost child. And so the lost child is, okay, so you have the hero, shiny, 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 and the scapegoat, shiny, shiny too, but in the opposite direction. The lost child, we just don't have the energy for you. Mm-hmm. We don't
kind of like fly under the radar.
Yes. Like, and also it's too much, like it's over they're more like they're usually more of maybe a sensitive soul, highly sensitive. And I mean that in the best way. When I use the word somebody is highly sensitive, I mean, it's another word for saying they're highly intelligent. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, so they will, they're invisible in the family. Their voice is not heard. They're not seen. They're not appreciated. They will also escape. They usually can be, they might have the flight trauma response. So they might always be at a friend's house or just always in their room or always in a book.
Or move out right when they get the first opportunity.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Mm-hmm. And so like the hero might wish they could go read a book, but the hero has to entertain, you know, they has to take care of and be present and accounted for and, you know, parents' best friend and all that. The loner can, you know, the loner that they're allowed to do that because it's like, ooh, I don't have to.
Yeah.
The lost child doesn't get their wants or needs met.
Mm-hmm.
They're okay. just invisible. So then you have, and so I'm a lost child in the way. So when I was in school, yes, I was getting A's, and the only friend was the teacher. The teacher's the only one who liked me. I was super shy. And so I'm lost in the sea of kids. Like mm-hmm. I'm lost. I don't know how to, and I'm always been a grown up. Like I was born a grown up, you know, like we don't addicts, as you know, like you are the same way. Like, well, who are these kids and what do they want from me? Like, I only know how to deal with adults. So, cause we were busy saving them.
Yeah.
And we knew how they worked. We don't know how these kids work. I'm a lost child in a lot of ways to like shut down, hide. So that's how, even though Matt Hero is my main one, that's a part of me too. I'm invisible.
Mm-hmm. So is it helpful to identify, you know, whether you identify with more than one, depending on the time of your life in therapy, so that you and your therapist can kind of talk to that role and the person? Like, how does that actually work?
I love labels, except when I don't. Like I love labels when they are helpful to me.
Yeah.
Labels help me feel seen. Mm-hmm. It's like Hero, scapegoat, lost child, mascot, which I'll talk about in a minute. Like, oh my gosh, like that's my family. Like I can look at those four roles, and my mom has three siblings, and they might as well, their pictures might as well appear. Like it's uncanny how
so it kind of normalizes it. In a
totally. And it's just like, oh, that's what this is. For me, it's always this. Oh, that's what that is. Oh, I'm not crazy.
Mm-hmm. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed, finding a unique gift that they'll love that's personal and that they won't already have can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise. There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
And also to see it, it's like, oh, this is a thing. this isn't just me. I'm weird. I'm, you know,
this isn't just our family. Yeah.
Yes. It's like, oh, this is in a textbook. Mm-hmm. Like, this is real. And so for me, if it's helpful, also it could, language is helpful. And so, as a metaphor, like I might use it as a metaphor. So like, da, 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 I did this again, or I fell into a hero trap again, or something like that in therapy. And yeah. then my therapist and I, we have a shorthand. It becomes yeah. part of our lexicon together. And so that those roles might slip in like that, or it could be a teaching moment. The therapist, a teaching moment either way, by the way, a therapist could say like, oh, did you know that's lost child? And then you're, oh, like that's a thing. But sometimes some therapists don't know this stuff. Like mm-hmm. they don't actually know these things. And that's what makes people like me and you beneficial, is because we've been there, done that. We know, like yeah. it's who we are. The mascots are there to cut the tension. The mascots are there to entertain, perform, be fucking funny, bring levity. That's the thing about a lot, like my family's so funny in the midst of all the dysfunction. It's like, it was still a good time. I mean, not really, but you know what I mean? Like it wasn't all just dark. There's some kids that come from, the family, there's just so much darkness, but with alcoholic families or at, families of addiction, a lot of times, not always, but there's a mascot there. Some of the disasters, you know, families will laugh at them because of the mascot.
And I think before, like, I think for anyone who identifies as like probably elder millennial, definitely Gen X and probably baby boomers, that's how we survived. Like we made fun of problems and people who had yes. feelings, you know, like, yes, and I think that's, absolutely. That's kind of the toxic side of it, but we learned to have humor through things that really needed that were like a bleeding wound.
Agree. That's why I think a lot of families of addicts, like we have gallows humor, like mm-hmm. where it's the dark of the, like, these are my people, like the darkest humor. Like sometimes I can't post a TikTok. It's just for my friends. Cause it's just too dark.
Yeah. Yeah. I am the same. I hesitate sometimes too. Okay. So let's move and talk about the four trauma responses.
You got it. So hold on. My brain just went blank.
I asked you to move really fast.
No, you're good. No. This is me. Fight or flight. So we know those. We've taught those in school, fight or flight. And so you either fight the bear to live or you flee from the bear, run from the bear. Mm-hmm. That's flight mode. And then, in the late 80s, I think, psychologists came out with, hey, by the way, there's also freeze. Mm-hmm. So freeze mode came into, you know, the psychological vernacular. And freeze mode is you freeze so the bear doesn't kill you. And right. so like right. deer do that, bunnies do that, like they freeze when they're scared. And so the question is, well, what do you do if your mom is the bear? So you can't run from your mother forever, like when you're a child and you can't fight your mother, although scapegoats do and fight, some fight mode kids do as well. But they're fighting. So they'll take care of them. They found that fighting is the only way that the parent fighting with the parent is the only way, like a scapegoat would only. Exactly. So that's how they live, is to fight.
That's how I used to be with my ex-husband. I feel like the only time he was paying attention to me was when I was acting crazy. So then he would call me crazy and then he would have to take care of me.
Yes, exactly. Toxic. So freezing is checking out mentally, mm-hmm. And it's also, you were so exhausted from trying to survive this that we get so tired. It's just physically and mentally draining to where we can't get off the couch or can't get off out of bed or whatever, just tired. So that's freeze mode. And then, oh my gosh, if you haven't read Pete Walker's book, Complex PTSD from Surviving to Thriving, it is incredible. There are lots of great, 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 great books on trauma. I love his book because he's one of us. Mm-hmm. So he teaches it from I have this perspective and I've lived this perspective. And so the words are so, it's just resonant.
Yeah.
So he came up with the fawn trauma response, which all this time people have been calling codependency. So the fawn trauma response is just basically codependency. And the fawn trauma response is you fawn the bear, compliment the bear on its fur, you know, tell the bear he's so nice. So the bear won't kill you and keep you around.
Sounds like people pleasing too, which is,
it is people pleasing in order. I call it extreme people pleasing in order to survive.
Okay.
And so again, we do these things and that's what's so hard about, I don't know if you found this too. So all this, whatever, Instagram, don't people please. That's blah, 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 blah. It's like, I wish I could stop. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a trauma response. This is life and death for me.
Yeah.
And when we stop, it's very uncomfortable. Like we don't know what to do when we're not allowed to do our trauma response because it has served its beautiful purpose, which mm-hmm. is to help us survive. And so what we do and what I teach my clients is slowly but surely we replace the trauma responses with tools.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have something else to rely on besides strictly our trauma response.
That is some big work. And I'm glad you said that. So in 2016, I wrote How to Stop Feeling Like Shit, came out in January 2018. And I talk about people pleasing in there. And one of the things that, and I still stand behind everything I said, because it's like, you have to dig in. Like you can't just, like you said, like you can't just like tell people to stop people pleasing. It's like telling them to cut off an arm and like, and just like go at your life.
Yeah. But and also stop thinking about polar bears.
Right. You're going to think about polar bears. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And one of the things that I've learned since then, and I'm actually updating the book and it's going to re-release next year. And one of the things that I've learned through some continuing education about trauma and some of my own work is exactly what you said, that it's a trauma response. Like we are trying to get people to love us because there's some need that's not being met. And that's the thing that you need to dig into with someone who is qualified to do it. You can't just I don't want to generalize. In my opinion, it is extremely challenging to just coach yourself through it. Or read a book and be like, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. I have found, as someone who identifies as a recovering codependent, that takes some very critical and compassionate self-awareness, and you have to be vigilant about it.
Absolutely.
Because anytime there's kind of like a conflict, I have to pause, and this has taken years of work. Pause and think about, okay, what is my next thought? Like, what does my instinct want me to do? My instinct wants to take care of anybody else who's emotional, ignore my own. Like, you have to get to know your, even if they're not your instincts, they're your patterns and your habits so that you can have compassion.
Yes. I think of it as an addiction. It helps me to think of codependency as an addiction. Mm-hmm. So it helps me to think of fawn response as an addiction. So you said it's like we want somebody to love us. I actually think it is so we will survive, because the psyche is going to figure out how to survive. We have a psychological immune system. We have a physiological immune system. And just like if I decided to hold my breath, my body would say, oh, that's so cute. I'm going to let you pass out now. Because I'm a brain and I need oxygen, you know, So the psyche does the same thing, in my opinion, that, when we're threatened, that it will take over and do what it does. Mm-hmm. And so for me, codependency is the hardest addiction. Cause if I'm an alcoholic, okay. P.S. This is an asterisk. All addictions are a nightmare. They're just different. However, so alcohol, I can stop drinking it. I don't need to drink alcohol to live. Drugs, I don't need to have them to survive. I don't have it. I'm a food addict and a bulimic, and I have to freaking eat to survive. Like I have to actually eat food. So I have to figure out a way to ingest food and not have it trigger my addiction. Okay. But food is still outside of me. Codependency is in my brain. Like the calls are coming from inside the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh my, it's how I think. You know, one of the things I teach people in my, like when they come to me for a session is, and they are, have somebody in their life who has a personality disorder. And then they're like, I don't know why that person's not going to therapy about this. And I said, well, because it's in their personality. People don't think there's something wrong with their personality. So why would I go to therapy for, why would I go to therapy for my personality? That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I'm amazing.
Yeah.
However, so that's what I think of codependency. It's part of our personality.
Well, and everyone has some aspects of it. I think that that's why totally. In the conversation, like if somebody just picks up Melody Beattie's book, like probably the most popular one on codependence, and they read like the first chapter, the introduction and all those bullet points, you're going to highlight some of them because these are just human characteristics of like being in relationship with people. It's where it like crosses the line.
Yeah. Just like in the DSM, if you look up narcissism, we might be able to highlight a couple of them, but we don't have all of them. That's what makes that a narcissist. And so I think of all of this on a continuum. There's some that I have and those, I love those bullet points on those pages. I thought,
do you highlight? And then, so what I do is like, I highlight something that I relate to. And then if I really relate to it, I put stars all around it and arrows.
Yes. Yes. And I might have to like take a step back and like, okay, oh my gosh. You know, it was one of those like, oh, I feel seen. Oh, this is a thing. This isn't just, I'm crazy. And so that's part of my process of healing is trying to find out where I am, who I truly am versus what were my trauma responses. And I want to heal those.
I like what you just said. I feel like that is the ultimate work that we are going to spend our entire lifetime doing. Do you feel that way?
Oh, that's what I'm on. I'm a big fan of Carl Jung. And so I'm on the individuation path. I'm trying to become whole in this lifetime as much as I can.
I was doing some continuing education and I can't remember his name. I didn't take the class. I was just watching like the preview of it. And he's actually an addiction, who specializes in addiction therapy. And his philosophy that he teaches people is that to come to that place where you are already whole, you know that you're already whole and that you are not broken. And that's so interesting to me, you know, like looking from the outside in at people's different kind of philosophies of healing and therapy and things like that. Do you find it, maybe this is just a personal question. Do you find it helpful or unhelpful to consider yourself whole or not whole or broken or not broken? How do you feel about like those kind of words?
Again, only if they're helpful. The person who said that and me, we're saying the same thing. The great news is regardless of the four roles of a dysfunctional family, hero, scapegoat, etc., and regardless of our trauma responses, they didn't kill us. We formed those trauma responses. Those are our coping skills. It feels like we died. It feels like because part of trauma is like we don't really know who we are because we had to create a false self in order to survive. And part of how we did that was through our trauma responses. But I'm everything that I need is within me. Like everything, my true self, my self with a capital S, is untouched. It's just very far away. Uh-huh. And now it's just less far away.
Yes. That deserves an applause. I love that.
Language, it just depends on what we find helpful. For me, the language of becoming whole is just, again, being somebody who is fascinated with Jungian psychology, and that's what I teach, and that's what has helped me the most. For me, the language of becoming whole, I'm kind of saying the same thing he is, except I'm using different words, but is to find those places in me that are already whole and live them.
Okay. Yes, I agree with that. And I've really gone back and forth, like as someone who talks about this a lot and writes about it and writes books, and I like the notion of helping people come to a place where they don't feel broken. However, I think the thing that's been conflicting personally is years ago, especially when I was first out of my super traumatic experience, I felt invalidated when people said, you're not broken. And I was like, Oh. You don't understand what happened to me. Like the profound humiliation that I dealt with, I felt broken. However, it feels empowering to me to have come from that place and be able to learn to heal myself and love myself and come back from that. So I think that's kind of what you're saying. Like you have to use what works for you.
Yes. And I mean, I was the brokenest bitch you ever did meet. Like I was fully broken. And if someone says, oh, but you're, you know, to me, some of it is like the toxic positivity. So you're not broke. Okay, yeah. Great. And don't manifest broken. Like, okay, I just need to express to you a truth of my life that I feel broken. Yeah. And if you are going to sit there and argue, like, just think about it. Just think about the toxicity of that moment. I'm broken. No, you're not. Okay, great. Another gaslighter. Do you know what I mean? Like, no, like, let me express my truth.
Sorry. Yeah. And that was tough. No. I agree with you. I don't think I've even talked about that a whole lot on the show. And just, I think that there was a long period of time where I don't feel, and my last therapist I had who also retired and I was very sad about who I was doing trauma therapy with. She commented on how I come to sessions and she's like, you're always so, she called me a performer. She's like, you're an entertainer. And I'm like, yeah, it's just part of my personality. And she's like, you don't have to be that way here, like with me. And I was like, but if I don't do that, you might see me for all of my woundedness. Like I'm getting emotional even just talking about it. If you see me in all of my woundedness, I feel naked. And I really want you to like me. I really want you to be my friend. Like, it's like that inner child of like, no. Like, that's not your role. Your role is to entertain, to make people smile, to have people tell you how funny you are and how magnetic you are. And that's it. Like anything else, you go do that in your room. Cause that's what I was told.
Absolutely. And do you recognize that as mascot?
Yeah. So and my family system, like to go back to that is tricky. And I'm assuming there's other people listening who were either an only child or who had step siblings who like lived with them part of the time. And with my family system, I was the youngest of five, but my older siblings were half siblings that came from my parents' previous marriages who were much older than I was. So it's, our roles have kind of shifted depending on our age and also depending on like when my dad died, in 2016, I saw all of our roles when these are adults, well into adulthood. I'm the youngest by far and I'm 46. So I noticed that when we got together, I found that they were treating me like a little girl. Mm-hmm. And it was very subtle. Mm-hmm. Like my brother patted me on the head. Wait, what just happened? And there was a little bit of mansplaining going on. Love him to death. But then I realized, and I'm like, oh, this is what we're doing. We're doing this dance.
Yes.
It was awkward. And I think I'm the only one that either I can't speak for them, but I feel like I was the only one that saw it and desperately wanted to point it out, but knew it would not be helpful in the moment.
No. And it's invisible.
And I wanted to get away.
It's invisible to them, you know, and
comfortable.
Totally.
I was not comfortable.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
You mentioned something about the psyche, and I love that you talk about how complex PTSD is the autoimmune disease of the psyche.
Yes.
So can you first just briefly explain what complex PTSD is for people that might not know that term?
Okay. So PTSD is when you have a traumatic event and then it's in the DSM, like it's an actual disorder, mm-hmm. Where you have a traumatic event and that you can point to it. It was the car accident. It was the war. It was
the robbery,
slap in the face. Yeah. What mm-hmm. like that, that was the thing that is causing me this. And it's crazy making, it's very upsetting and hard, but you do have a thing that you can point to. CPTSD or complex PTSD is another way of saying childhood trauma, where there's not just one thing. It's just, I think of it as like being a fish in water. It's just the water, and that's complex yeah. PTSD. It's just, and it's complex to heal because some of this, we don't know how, there's not, again, one particular thing. And the thing about most people think, well, I don't have that because my parents didn't beat me, or I don't have that because my parents were alcoholics, or I don't have that. And I don't think any of us get through childhood unscathed by some kind of traumatic thing. I mean, it could even be like, mommy, can I have more dinner or whatever? And it's like, oh, mommy's busy, because she's actually busy. Mm-hmm. Not trying, that child could get a complex. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like
they're just little psyches and they can't, mm-hmm. They don't know. So, this isn't me. And it's not parent blaming. Like we're indoctrinated by our culture, our society, our schools, our other people in our lives. So we don't know. A lot of us do know really horrific things that happened in our childhood, but that still doesn't mean that what we don't remember is the invisible messages about, like, no one's going to tell you to a lost child, hey, I just want to let you know, we're not interested in your wants or needs. And could you just shut up and be invisible? That's never said. But the message comes across through little things like being pat on the head mm-hmm. and little, just the micro expressions. Like we can feel the toxicity in the room. And even that, and a child enduring, I think about like people, oh, we're staying together for the kids, but they hate each other. It's just like the kids know.
They know.
Like we can feel it. Like, mm-hmm. It's not a secret. And so now I have to be raised in a home where I have to endure two people's hatred of each other every day. That's trauma.
Yes. I think so many people are probably thinking of things. And for some, maybe it's memories that they don't remember, but something is going on in their body, or they get triggered by something that seems innocuous and they're like, what is that? And it might be something that the memory has been suppressed. So talk to us about the metaphor of the autoimmune disease of the psyche.
I think, autoimmune diseases, it's like it's the body attacking itself. Like mm-hmm. it's the body. Yeah. And I'm not an expert on those. It's like the body's turning on itself in one way or another, or something's, there's not like an external bacteria or something like that. Okay. So it's the body doing that. And the psyche, childhood trauma, CPTSD is like, I hate myself. It's the mind, it's the psyche turning on its own self. I'm stupid, I'm lame, I'm ridiculous, I don't deserve good things, I'm bad. The abuse or dysfunction or whatever we had to endure that made us end up with CPTSD, that's gone. We still have to deal with toxic family members sometimes, or a toxic spouse or something. But where that's formed now, we're doing it to ourselves.
Yeah.
To survive. Again, mm-hmm. We're not being bad. And it's like, well, you should just accept a compliment. You deserve it. Okay, great. Thanks. Okay. That's not helpful because there's trauma in there and we have to, so it's in us. That's what I meant by that.
I'm assuming too, the thing that I was thinking of when you were saying all those things that somebody with an adult with CPTSD might think is, maybe it also manifests as believing that the world isn't safe, that people are not safe, that you cannot trust anyone or anything.
Correct. That's well earned. They figured that out. They learned that. Mm-hmm. I just wrote a book on trust and CPTSD. That's what I call them, CPTSD kids. One of the first developmental stages is trust versus mistrust. And we don't pass that one. Like, we don't develop trust because we're just constantly being betrayed or let down, or we learned that we can't trust anybody. I mean, I was a rock, I was an island. Like, I was taught by my grandmother if you're looking for a helping hand, look at the end of your arm.
Mm-hmm. God, wasn't that such a baby boomer? Like, that rugged individualism. My mom was the same. It's like one of the earliest pieces of advice that I remember her telling me is the only person that you will ever be able to rely on is yourself.
Yeah.
And she meant well. She meant well because she got married at 17, had two kids, and her husband was a jerk.
Can I just say, Fawn's that that's a Fawn response that she didn't mean well. Because the message is also, you can't rely on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember her telling me that more than once.
Yeah.
I interpreted it as like, that's her own trauma talking about
of course.
Who have let her down over and over again.
But I think Fawns, we all need to lose the phrase they meant well. No, they didn't. We can acknowledge that wasn't, you know, I mean, we can say she said it. That's fine. She said it, but I don't, mm-hmm. That's just passing on something that's not very healthy. And again, the message in that is, if I'm telling my child that the only person you can rely on is yourself, I'm also telling them that means PS, you can't rely on me. And that's traumatic. That's traumatic.
Can't rely on me or your father.
Yeah. And that's not meaning well. Sorry.
Yeah.
But the reason I'm saying that it like that is we're indoctrinated to say to people who have said hurtful things to us that they meant well. And we're indoctrinated to say, well, we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. It's true. They're also have childhood trauma. Like that they pass it on. And I'm not saying that, I don't mean that they're bad. I'm just saying like, it's just a truth. And we can finally stop saying that they meant well. We can just say that those things happen. And I wrote my favorite word. And also one of my favorite tools is and. Mm-hmm. My parents hurt me and I could cry rivers about what they went through, but it's still true that they hurt me.
Yeah.
You know, both can be true.
Yeah. And I've also, cause I sort of obsess on like my own parenting and like trying to get everything right and trying to do things differently and like break the cycles. And I finally, several years ago, so my kids are 14 and 12 now, I have come to the realization and I'm like, my children are going to talk about me in therapy someday. Because I can't control how they interpret my parenting.
Oh, well, my thing is there's at least 10 good reasons why my kids need to go to therapy to talk about me specifically. Like at least 10, not incidents, reasons, like global, like no. I got into recovery. I wanted to break the cycle for my firstborn child. And so what I found, so when I had a baby, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to break the cycle. So that was the beginning of my adventures in therapy. And what I found out, which was very sad, very, very sad. You can only break the cycle for yourself because so me overcompensating for things that I didn't get was also not that helpful to my kids.
Mm-hmm. So, I realize that too.
Yeah.
That it might be not the thing that they need.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So me fawning my kids, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Some of the fawning that I did with them to get them to like me, but also a quick, for instance, is one time my daughter, so my mom, oh God, please never let her find this podcast. Never apologized ever. And so one of my things is, you know, as God is my witness, I'm going to apologize to my kids when I mess up because I'm human and it's a blah, blah, blah. So then I apologize to my kids. Mommy should not have said that, you know, mommy, like whatever. Sorry, mommy did that and that was dumb or whatever. And then one time my daughter, you know, over the ages, I said, hey, I just want to, and she goes, what are you going to do? Apologize. And I was like, oh, it doesn't. it doesn't matter. You're the mother and it's going to be, you know what I mean? It was too much what I was doing. And I appreciate her telling
me. Oh man.
Do you know what I'm saying? So the thing, yes. I was trying to like save my child's life, break the cycle by saying, but maybe I was doing it too much. And is that even a good example for a woman to teach her daughter to apologize all the time? So I'm like, fine, you know, but here's what we do know is that it's better.
Yeah.
It's better. True. It's better. It's better.
Yeah, I agree. I could talk to you all day.
I could talk to you forever.
I'm gonna have to have you back on because I still have questions that I didn't ask you.
I would love
it. We'll do a part two with Elizabeth, but I do want to ask you the question that I've been asking all the guests on this theme is, it's a gigantic whopper of a question. And I just, in your own words, how do we heal ourselves?
I love this question. And I actually don't think it's a whopper of a question. I love it. I got into therapy because I wanted to stop throwing up in a toilet 50 times a day. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to save my child's life and break the cycle for my children. And I just wanted to stop doing that. Like I just wanted to stop being so messed up, and I stopped wanting to be sad all the time. And I wanted to stop hating myself. Like that's after I got through the addiction, and then I found, you know, had to do all that stuff, and it just kept going. And then what I have found is that when you heal your trauma, your life can become so magical. It is magical to walk around in the world and actually love yourself and find yourself, I'm great company with myself. Like it's just, and so for me, what has happened is that when you heal this stuff, like life is magical. I'm magical. Like, and part of all the things that I teach people to do, you know, just so the answer to the question is, how do you heal? The psyche is vast. And when a client comes into session with me and they say, I'm wasting my session, or I don't want to talk about the wrong thing. I want to talk about the right thing. What I tell them is this: the psyche is vast and it has many doors. It's like, it has a lot of doors. So if you come in and talk about your boss being an asshole, we're going to learn a tool. And that tool, so that door goes into the psyche, and now you have that tool and you can use it with everyone. Mm. It heals everything. And then if you want to talk about how, you know, a client wants to talk about their kid being bullied at school or something like that, we walk in that door and then those tools, and then there might be some healing in them because maybe they were bullied too or what. And so how do we heal? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you do to heal. You want to read a book, read a book. You want to go to a meeting, go to a meeting. You want to go to therapy, go to therapy. You want to follow some, you know, mental health people on TikTok or Instagram, do that. Like, and so what I always say is you follow the thread. So I've mentioned a few books. You've mentioned a few books on this podcast. Somebody's going to hear this and they're going to be like, ooh, that book sounds interesting. And I'll say, follow the thread. Mm-hmm. So you follow the thread and you get that book, and then you read that book, and then you learn something else, and then you follow the thread again to the new thing or the other book, or, you know, you just follow the thread to the new person that says the thing that you needed to hear. And you just keep going and keep going and you never stop. And the consequences for me of living that life are truly magical, like beyond. I want to cry. It's so great. Yeah. It's so great. It doesn't mean I'm happy all the time. And it doesn't mean I'm not a bitch. And it doesn't mean I'm not a nightmare or annoying, or I don't go into my trauma responses, but it does mean it's magical still.
I believe you. And I wholeheartedly back that message. Thank you so much for giving us your time. I am for sure going to have you back on. Elizabeth's books are going to be in the show notes, links to those, as well as her social media and her website. Everyone, please go message her on Instagram and tell her how much you loved this show, or tag her as you share this podcast episode. And remember, everyone, it's our life's journey to make ourselves better humans and our life's responsibility to make the world a better place. Bye for now.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to the show. I hope you truly loved this conversation that I had with Elizabeth. And if you are someone who would like more support in your life, I encourage you to check out our private coaching. You can do the easy way and go to AndreaOwen.com/apply, and you'll answer some questions. And then my team will be in touch letting you know what the next step is. And that's probably putting you together with the possible right coach for you. It might be me, or it might be one of my lead coaches, Sabrina or Liz. We all specialize in something slightly different. So if you're interested, again, head on over to AndreaOwen.com/apply.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.